Starbucks.
Star Wax.
Randy Quaid.
Heath Ledger.
Brittany Murphy.
Amanda Bynes.
Charlie Sheen.
Bill Cosby.
Scott Stapp.
Who?
From Creed.
Creed!
Can you take me higher
to a place where blind men see?
Michael Jackson.
Whitney Houston.
Amy Winehouse.
Kurt Cobain.
Jimi Hendrix.
Janis Joplin.
John Lennon.
Marilyn Monroe.
JFK.
RFK.
MLK.
MKUltra! The entire music industry.
Monarch Programming.
Beta Kittens.
Pedophile Rings.
Roman Polanski.
Rosemary's Baby.
Stanley Kubrick.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Spielberg.
Bilderberg.
Achoo!
Gesundheit.
God Bless You. Hollywood.
Magic Wand.
Archons.
Enough said.
Is he telling the truth or is he telling a lie? He's the conspiracy guy.
I've got two that can see.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
Injection, fellas.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
This is Waterloo.
You are basically siding with a very far left conspiracy theory in this very conservative state of South Carolina.
Have you had anybody come up to you and say Building 7? Have you had Building 7?
No.
Oh,
no.
Walk around. Yeah. Be on television a little more. You'll get the Building 7 guys. That's the theory.
But it is remarkable that you've got a Republican candidate on a Republican debate essentially quoting the Bush lied, people died bumper sticker from the left.
I'm not the one who's so far away when I feel the snake bite and tear my veins. Never did I wanna be here again, and I don't remember why I came.
In God we trust is the official motto of the United States, but many people object to that phrase for religious reasons. The Now's Lauren Wilson is in the newsroom, and Lauren, there's a group who wants the phrase removed from our currency.
This one's sure to get you talking. A group of Satanists set to give the opening prayer at a Phoenix City Council meeting, and that is not sitting right with everyone.
Baphomet's upside-down crosses and Satan. The Satanic Temple of Tucson is coming to Phoenix.
We're going to begin today's meeting with an invocation.
But the devil's in the details, as they say. At least he will be next month when Satanists will give the opening remarks.
And if you can, please stand for the invocation.
Instead of bowing their heads, some are raising an eyebrow at the idea.
What's causing this is what I want to
know. It's kind of weird. It really is, though, to see that many at one time, fall from the sky. Just...
Not one or two, but nearly 40 starlings were found laying dead on this street.
It was really unusual.
An unusual occurrence and a disturbing sight for both people who live and work around this neighborhood, as well as the responders who saw these birds.
Hazing clouds rain on my head. Empty thoughts fill my ears. Find my shade by the moonlight. Why my thoughts aren't so clear? Demons dreaming. Breathe in, breathe in. I'm coming back again. I'm not the one who's so far away. When I feel the snake bite enter my veins, never did I wanna be here again. And I don't remember.
The dawn of our civilization, all the way to the time of this breaking news, we human believed that everything that exists up there is only what we can see with our eyes and with our optical instruments. Well, things have changed now, because we have established the existence of entities existing in our terrestrial environment, and these entities are completely invisible to our eyes as well as to our optical instruments, but are fully visible with new instruments, therefore dramatically enlarging our conception of the perceivable universe, with far-reaching possibility of future development and discoveries that perhaps are beyond our imagination at this time.
The revolutionary Santilli telescope is designed to detect antimatter in deep space. By antimatter, we mean an entity with characteristics that are the exact opposite of ordinary matter.
Those entities appear to conduct unauthorized surveillance of rather sensitive civilian, industrial, and military installations.
What we have learned is that reality is much bigger than we originally supposed. Reality consists not only of things that we can see and observe with our eyes and ordinary telescopes, but things that we can't see with our eyes and with ordinary telescopes. But the Santilli telescope allows us to see things that we have never seen before.
Bothelman, who says his home is haunted by poltergeists, turning over his furniture, burning his Bibles, and throwing objects, says he finally has some answers. A team from the Scientific Establishment of Parapsychology just released their report that says his home may be haunted by the spirits of Irish settlers. So tonight, you can decide for yourself.
Watch the screen and listen carefully. Did you hear the baby laughing? Here, we'll play it again. Bothell resident Keith Linder says that voice was caught on surveillance camera when nobody was home, along with what he says seems to be a shadow moving near the motion detector. A few minutes later, the alarm goes off. It's the latest evidence of what he says is 4 years of poltergeist activity in his home.
Not all, but most of all my cabinet doors are open.
He found his upstairs office completely trashed and objects thrown.
Scissors are in the wall.
Even a candle striking the wall with so much force it left a large hole. Here, watch it again. Linder just wanted an explanation for the phenomena.
A previous team, Ghost Adventures, had been in and left with zero evidence and kind of pitted us in a wrong light of attention-getting, hoaxing.
But he refused to give up. Linder convinced parapsychologist Steve Mara and paranormal specialist Don Phillips from the UK to investigate using a room full of equipment that they say recorded a smoke detector being knocked off the wall.
Okay, let's go.
Let's go now.
Okay. Whoa. You guys know where this has been since you've been here.
I can't see why that would fall off because it's got very deep set holes.
No, if any vibration will.
Falling off, nonchalant.
Well, that's really interesting. We did hear the sound from downstairs. It was a louder sound than it did seem through the replication, but definitely this on the floor, and it didn't. You can't get it off there.
After a week living in the house, they certified it as intelligent haunting, partly because of the evidence you're about to hear for yourself.
We came here, we listened to Keith's story, we visited a priest. That priest told us something quite phenomenal, that there was evidence, or he believed, that the building, Keith's home, was built over, well, you know, settlements of people who have passed away and maybe still be here.
So Phillips crawled underneath the home.
So I was a bit concerned early on because we kind of lost him for about 20 minutes.
And came out with some freaky recordings.
Many of them are so clear. I'm just gobsmacked.
Bears.
They also say they got recordings of spirits answering questions.
Is any Irish? Any Irish gentlemen or ladies here?
For his part, Linder feels vindicated.
We were dragged through the mud, my girlfriend especially, dragged through the mud as being hoaxers, pranksters, and attention seekers, none which are true.
So the paranormal scientists say they have 427 recordings of EVPs, or electronic voice phenomena, and they will release their results to other researchers.
It's interesting. It caught my attention the first time we aired it.
Yeah.
Why does he stay there?
It's a really good question.
Believe it or not, I mean, it's creepy enough that I'd be out of there.
Yeah, but we asked him today, and he said that now he's kind of to the point where he's not going to be driven out of the home, right? He wants to get some answers, and believe it or not, that's a rental home that he's in. Yeah, that he and his girlfriend have been in. So they're just not going to give up, and I think what happened when Ghost Adventures kind of slammed them and said there was nothing there, they kind of dug their heels in. Right. After months, they got these guys to come over, and now these are very well-known paranormal researchers who have said, we have all this evidence, and I just showed you a little bit of what they've got. And so I think he's not going anywhere for now.
Let's hope they can coexist nicely.
Yeah, they did. The spirits did say they don't mean him any harm.
Oh, right. Okay. From the creepy spirits.
Kill the light.
right, but the nights are sleepless. Night heaves with the bleakest secrets. A shadow waits in the black, and I awake with a devil on my back. I'm contesting my reckless weakness, desperately wrestling restless demons, but all the odds are stacked. Yes, I'm no match for the devil on my back. From the woods like
everybody who watches the movie They Live get freaked out by that movie, even though it's a John Carpenter movie from the 80s, still to this day people freak out watching it. It's because deep down, even the least conspiracy-minded person wonders to themselves after they watch that film, how much of that is true? All these decades later, that movie still touches the nerve that to some extent, that stuff is going on. That there might be a signal or various signals that are being sent out to control the population, to control society's thoughts, to steer and direct their impulses. And today, these kinds of messages are coming earlier and earlier, and they're being taught to our children through what they watch on television, where they probably can't even fully grasp that concept yet. But the establishment is feeding it into their little minds anyway. Case in point, SpongeBob. Most people here have seen the SpongeBob movie where the evil mastermind Plankton is going to take over the town by giving everyone a metal bucket helmet with an antenna on top. And then he launches a giant antenna into the air out of his restaurant that sends out a signal beaming to these helmets and turns everybody into willing, obedient zombie slaves, basically. Now, you guys know, you've seen our videos, you've come to our channel. Electromagnetic frequency-based mind control, I mean, we've discussed that at length. We've shown, gosh, I don't know, military documents and patents. There's all kinds of research that's been done in this area, starting all the way back, actually before the CIA launched MKUltra. That documentation is out there for anybody who wants to go look at that, find it. People call us conspiracy theorists, but you're either going to go read and do the research on that and know for yourself what exists and what's been weaponized, etc., or you're not. I mean, if you think it's a conspiracy, frequency-based mind control, then it's simply because you have not done enough reading and research. That's all I can say about that. So the other day, I'm sitting here working, in my office, and my kid is in the other room watching a Pokemon cartoon. And all of a sudden, the words just in the background while I'm working start coming to me, and I realize what the topic is that he's actually watching. And this is a cartoon that's rated Youth 7, so it's rated for 7-year-olds, who aren't going to have any idea about these kinds of technologies or how they actually can work and how very low-level non-ionizing radiation can affect your nervous system, all that kind of stuff. Stuff that little kids, right over their heads, just near airplane. This is some very interesting predictive programming in this cartoon. You need to see this.
Mr. Getzis, I trust you were able to witness that. I have a theory. Pokemon brain waves are divided into 4 groups. They are alpha waves, beta waves, gamma waves, and delta waves. Using electromagnetic waves to create stress in the test subject, we increase its power to maximum potential. Previously, the EM waves emitted by this device affected any nearby Pokemon. Now, we can target specific test subjects thanks to numerous upgrades. The key to the success of this device is that it suppresses the alpha waves while amplifying the gamma and delta waves. I've succeeded in targeting a specific Pokemon and maximizing its power, and they're under our control at all times.
That's what they're showing little kids in a Pokemon cartoon. Total revelation of the method to small children who aren't even going to understand these concepts in a concrete way or realize that that's the kind of technology that governments and military have been working on for decades now. And now they're just casually putting that in as a plot for a Pokemon cartoon primarily watched by children. Okay? It really, really makes my skin... I get goosebumps. Because I wonder to myself if the Navy Yard shooter, Aaron Alexis, who had carved my ELF weapon into his gun before he went on a rampage and killed a bunch of people at the Navy Yard, I wonder what he would have thought about watching this Pokemon cartoon when he went to the police and said, they are beaming me with electromagnetic frequency weapons and torturing me with that. I watched this Pokemon cartoon and I have to wonder to myself, when they laughed at him, did they go, oh, you know, that's silly. That's just the plot of a Pokemon cartoon or something. Just, you're crazy.
Now we can target specific test subjects and they're under our control at all times.
If your limbs begin dissolving in the water that you tread, all surroundings are evolving in the stream that clears your head. Find yourself a caravan like Noah must have led. 4 and 20 birds of Maya baked into an atom you, polarized into existence, magnet heart from red to blue, to such extent the realm of dark within the picture it seems true. All your lightning waits inside you, travel it along your spine. 7 stars receive your visit, 7 seals remain divine. 7 churches filled with spirit, treasure from the angel's mine. The space you make has your own laws, no longer human gods or cause. The center of this house will never die. 1-eyed men aren't really reigning, they just march in place until 2-eyed men with mystery training finally feel the power fill. 3-eyed men are not complaining, they can yo-yo where they will. They slip inside this house as they pass by.
The best-selling thriller from Da Vinci Code author Dan Brown is the new one is called, what is it, The Lost Symbol,
the
right?
The Lost Symbol.
Set in the nation's capital, and it's centered on the world's oldest and largest fraternity.
Brown's book has renewed interest in the Freemasons, and as Elaine Quijano tells us this morning, it is a secret society that is still very well represented in Washington.
John and Kieran, for all the conspiracy theories about Freemasons, this much is true. They can still be found at the highest levels of American government. From the Capitol to the White House, Freemasons throughout history have freely roamed the halls of power in Washington. 9 of the men who signed the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons, as were more than a dozen U.S. presidents, including George Washington, who famously laid the cornerstone of the Capitol building clad in his ceremonial Masonic apron. These days, Masons can still be found in powerful government positions. Masonic historian Arturo de Hoyos.
We have egalitarian ideas. We believe that people should rule themselves, that they should elect their own leaders, that they should be governed by constitutions, have separations of power.
Senator Chuck Grassley's a Mason, so is Senator John Tester. But getting someone to chat about it can sometimes be tricky.
I'm doing health care.
Senator Mike Enzi didn't break stride while explaining why he's part of the secretive society.
It's a brotherhood built on constructing good men.
Yet behind these closed doors...
I became a Mason in my local lodge in Beckley, West Virginia.
Secrets revealed.
This was this 32nd degree.
Congressman Nick Rahal, a Mason for almost four decades, decoded Masonry's most prolific symbol.
You may see the compass and the square as symbols of Masonic training. We live by the square. We're upright individuals.
The congressman describes Masonry as a fraternity. He says his mentor and fellow Mason, West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd, nominated him for membership. As a 33rd degree Mason, the highest level in the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, Congressman Rahal acknowledges there are a lot of secrets and codes, but he says they're not sinister.
So are you trying to rule the world?
Well, let's say no. But if we were, would I tell you? No. Well, let's say no. But if we were, would I tell you? No.
Congressman Rahal says Freemasonry today is more of a social organization, and despite the prominent positions of some members, is not a forum to discuss power politics. John, Karen?
Elaine Quijano this morning. Elaine, thanks. We should also mention, too, that they raise millions upon millions of dollars every year for charities. So.
See that? And he wouldn't tell you if they rule the world.
I like that.
Tonight, we're beginning a two-part special investigation of secret societies. You know their names, you've probably heard the rumors. We'll now get the facts, and we're going to start with the Freemasons. 5 million people around the world are believed to be members. More of them than you might think are in positions of power in Washington, and that has led to plenty of conspiracy theories about Masons controlling our government. So we put Tom Foreman on the case to get the real story.
Cloaked in mystery, their ways hidden from view, one of the greatest secret societies holds a centuries-old sway over Washington, the Masons. Or maybe not. I met Dick Fletcher across from the White House. He's a top official with the Masons, or Freemasons as they're also known. And here, amid statues of Revolutionary War heroes, he tells us many of them were indeed Masons.
They believed in the principles of Freemasonry, and to that extent, the extent of truthfulness and the extent of ethics and honor and morality, yes. I truly hope Freemasonry had an influence in their lives.
But it wasn't a conspiracy.
Oh, absolutely not. That's just foolishness.
Or is it, you're just not telling me because it's a secret? You're just not telling me because it's a secret.
Instead, they end up dead in my swimming pool. Makes you sort of wonder why. Why do we live here? What the fuck are we doing? And where are we gonna go in the big city? We can't survive here. It's a fucking desert.
Have you seen the traffic?
You can travel this land with your dick in your hand and your head right up your ass. But there's a record for a drought that has the line it in and out. Let's see how long our water lasts.
Ooh, why do we live here? What the fuck are we doing? And where we gonna go when the big thing comes? We don't belong here. Probably gonna be an earthquake, and we're all gonna die. On the 101.
You can shut. I'm gonna shut my windows, close my blinds, turn on my AC. I don't aim to be there for the end times. I'll just watch it on TV.
The rising waters will envelop the coasts. The sun will scorch our backs. Keith Richards will be safe in a magic boat with Magic Johnson and Greg's dad. I've been a douchebag, been a scumbag, had a browser's account. Alas, it was all in vain. 'Cause no maternal curvy Asian who could one day be a Reagan will survive the end of days. One more time, why do we live here? What the fuck are we doing? And where we gonna go when the big thing comes? Why do we live here? What the fuck are we doing? And where we gonna go when the big thing comes? Why do we? What the fuck are we doing? And where we gonna go when the bitch day comes? Why do we live here? What the fuck are we? Indiana before the big space comes.
The religious leaders you're about to meet are not your typical women and men of the cloth. These pastors are challenging the status quo. So can their new age approach help people renew a connection with their faith and break down barriers in the church?
From weave snatching on The Real Housewives of Atlanta to the ridiculous insanity that is Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. It's not something many residents here are proud of, even as we secretly chuckle that it's entertaining.
Atlanta's off the chain!
This newest reality series, featuring this fine city and another mostly black cast, might seem like more of the same. But leave it to television to make it big and different. All of the characters showing out are men and women of the cloth.
God is gonna heal your heart!
It's called Preachers of Atlanta.
I think that tutu is almost like, wow! It kind of like lets you just be, you know, crazy, and you're going to get outside your box.
And this is Pastor Leandria Johnson.
Here goes nothing.
Going the extra mile for her ministry, dressing up as a prostitute to blend in a tough neighborhood downtown.
I am a pastor, right?
Okay.
And I'm trying to find women that look like me.
She even hands out condoms and cigarettes.
You got some condoms? You can give me some condoms.
When all of the pastors get together at a hip-hop listening party, the drama isn't far.
An interesting new allegation has just surfaced of somebody that claims to have been at a secret meeting back in 1991, where they say that essentially the Illuminati sort of commissioned the hip-hop industry to promote gangster rap and just these, you know, garbage thug images as a way to try to influence and encourage crime to benefit the private prison industry, right? So this letter titled "The Secret Meeting That Changed Rap Music and Destroyed a Generation" surfaced on a website called hiphopisred.com not long ago, allegedly from somebody that emailed it to them that says that they were at this meeting, right? Now, of course, there's no way to verify this. It could be, there's any number of reasons for what this could be. This could be some sort of a hoax to try to drive traffic to this website, right? Since it's a pretty interesting idea, and people know that the Illuminati influenced the music industry, and so, you know, maybe they thought they'd provide a missing piece of the puzzle, okay? Another possibility is that maybe it's some sort of, you know, conspiracy fan fiction. You know, some reader sort of wants to provide, you know, evidence to show how the industry is, you know, influencing culture. Or, I mean, it could also be, you know, somebody at this meeting that decided to come forward. Why they emailed it to some random website that I've never heard of, hiphopisred.com, I don't know. Maybe it's some popular website, but I would think you'd probably want to call, you know, maybe MTV or Spin Magazine, there's a bunch of magazines, Rolling Stone out there. Somebody would cover this story if this person would probably, I guess they're not going to go on record. So since most people don't read, most people just want to press a button and have things fed to them. People don't want to really do anything anymore. I'll just read the letter to you now. And you can decide whether or not you think that it's legitimate or not. It's titled, like I said, The Secret Meeting That Changed Rap Music and Destroyed a Generation. And it says here that this anonymous letter landed in my inbox a few minutes ago. Hello. For more than 20 years, I've finally decided to tell the world what I witnessed in 1991, which I believe was one of the biggest turning points in popular music and ultimately American society. I've struggled for a long time weighing the pros and cons of making this story public, as I was reluctant to implicate individuals who were present that day. So I've simply decided to leave out the names and the details that may risk my personal well-being and that of those who were, like me, dragged into something they weren't ready for. Between the late 1980s and early 90s, I was what you would call a decision maker with one of the more established companies in the music industry. I came to Europe in the early 1980s and quickly established myself in the business. The industry was difficult back then, since technology and media weren't accessible to people like they are today. The industry had more control over the public and had means to influence them any way it wanted. This may explain why in early 1991 I was invited to a closed-door meeting with a small group of music business insiders to discuss rap music's new direction. Little did I know that we would be asked to participate in one of the most unethical and destructive business practices I've ever seen. The meeting was held in a private residence in the outskirts of Los Angeles. I remember about 25 to 30 people being there, most of them familiar faces. Speaking to those I knew, we joked about the theme of the meeting, as many of us did not care for rap music and failed to see the purpose of being invited to a private gathering to discuss its future. Among the attendees was a small group of unfamiliar faces who stayed to themselves and made no attempt to socialize beyond their circle. Based on their behavior and formal appearances, they did not seem to be from our industry. Our casual chatter was interrupted when we were asked to sign a confidentiality agreement preventing us from publicly discussing the information presented during the meeting. Needless to say, this intrigued and in some cases disturbed many of us. The agreement was only one page long, but very clear on the matter and consequences, which stated violating the terms would result in job termination. We asked several people what this meeting was about and the result and the reason for such secrecy, but couldn't find anyone who had answers for us. A few people refused to sign and walked out. No one stopped them. I was tempted to follow, but curiosity got the best of me. A man who was part of the unfamiliar group collected the agreements from us. Quickly after the meeting began, one of my interesting industry colleagues, who will remain nameless like everyone else, thanked us for attending. He then gave the floor to the man, who only introduced himself by first name and gave no further details about his personal background. I think he was the owner of the residence, but this was never confirmed. He briefly praised us for the success we had achieved in our industry and congratulated us for being selected as part of the group of decision makers. At this point, I began to feel slightly uncomfortable with the strangeness of this gathering. The subject quickly changed as the speaker went on to tell us the respective companies we represented had invested in a very profitable industry that would become even more rewarding with our active involvement. He explained that the companies we worked for had invested millions into the building of privately owned prisons and that our positions of influence in the music industry would actually impact the profitability of these investments. I remember many of us in the group immediately looked at each other in confusion. At the time, I did not know what a private prison was, but I wasn't the only one. Sure enough, someone asked what these prisons were and what any of this had to do with us. We were told that the prisons were built by privately owned companies who received funding from the government based on the number of inmates. The more inmates, the more money the government would pay these prisons. This is true. It was made clear to us that since these prisons are privately owned, as they are publicly traded, we'd be able to buy shares. Most of us were taken back by this. Again, a couple people asked what this had to do with us. At this point, my industry colleague, who had first opened the meeting, took the floor again and answered our questions. He told us that since our employers had become silent investors in this prison business, it was now their interest to make sure these prisons remained filled. Our job was to help make this happen by marketing music which promotes criminal behavior, rap music being of choice. He assured us that this would be a great situation for us because rap music was becoming an increasingly profitable market for our companies, and as employees, we'd be able to buy personal stocks in these prisons. Immediate silence came over the room. You could have heard a pin drop. I remember looking around to make sure that I wasn't dreaming and saw half the people with dropped jaws. My daze was interrupted when someone shouted, "Is this an effing joke?" At this point, things became chaotic. Two of the men who were part of the unfamiliar group grabbed the man who shouted and attempted to remove him from the house. A few of us, myself included, tried to intervene. One of them pulled a gun and we all backed off. They separated us from the crowd and all four of us were escorted outside. My industry colleague, who had opened the meeting earlier, hurried out to meet us and reminded us that we had signed an agreement and would suffer the consequences about speaking publicly with those, or even with those who attended the meeting. I asked him why I was involved with something so corrupt, and he said it was bigger than the music business, and we'd want to challenge without risking consequences. We all protested as he walked back into the house. I remember word for word the last thing he said, "It's out of my hands now. Remember, you signed the agreement." He then closed the door behind him. The men rushed us to our cars and actually watched until we drove off. A million things were going through my mind as I drove away, and I eventually decided to pull over and park on the side of the street in order to collect my thoughts. I replayed everything in my mind repeatedly, and it seemed very surreal to me. I was angry at myself for not having taken a more active role in questioning what had been presented to us. I'd like to believe the shock of it all is what suspended my better nature. After what seemed like an eternity, I was able to calm myself enough to make it home. I didn't talk to call anyone that night. The next day, back at the office, I was visibly out of it, but blamed it on being under the weather. No one else in my department had been invited to the meeting. I felt a sense of guilt for not being able to share what I had witnessed. I thought about contacting the three others who were kicked out of the house, but I didn't remember their names and thought tracking them down would probably bring unwanted attention. I considered speaking out publicly at the risk of losing my job, but I realized I'd probably be jeopardizing more than my job, and I wasn't willing to risk anything happening to my family. I thought about those men with the guns and wondered, who were they? I had been told this was bigger than the music business, and all I could do was let my imagination run free. There were no answers and no one I could talk to. I tried to do a little bit of research on private prisons, but didn't uncover anything about the music business's involvement. However, the information I did find confirmed how dangerous this prison business really is. Days turned into weeks, weeks turned into months. Eventually, it was as if the meeting had never taken place. It all seemed surreal. I became more reclusive and stopped going to any industry events unless professionally obligated to. On two occasions, I found myself attending the same function as my former colleague. Both times, our eyes met, but nothing more was exchanged. As the months passed on, rap music definitely changed direction. I was never a fan of it, but I could tell the difference. Rap acts that talked about politics or harmless fun were quickly fading away as gangster rap started dominating the airwaves. Only a few months had passed since the meeting, but I suspected that the ideas presented that day had been successfully implemented. It was as if the order had been given to all major executives. The music was climbing the charts, and most companies were more than happy to capitalize on it. Each one was churning out their very own gangster rap acts on an assembly line. Everyone bought into it, consumers included. Violence and drug use became a central theme of most rap music. I spoke to my fellow peers in the industry to get their opinion on the new trend and was told repeatedly that it was about supply and demand. Sadly, many of them expressed that the music reinforced their prejudices of minorities. I officially quit the music industry business in 1993, but my heart had already left months earlier. I broke ties with the majority of my peers and removed myself from this thing I once loved. I took some time off, returned to Europe for a few years, settled out of state, and lived a quiet life away from the world of entertainment. As the years passed, I managed to keep my secret, fearful of sharing it with the wrong person, but also a little ashamed of not having had the balls to blow the whistle. But as rap got worse, my guilt grew. Fortunately, in the late 1990s, having the internet as a resource which wasn't at my disposal in the early days made it easier for me to investigate what is now labeled the prison industrial complex. Now that I have a greater understanding of how the private prisons operate, things make much more sense than they ever have. I see how the criminalization of rap music plays a big part in promoting racial stereotypes and misguided so many impressionable young minds into adopting these glorified criminal behaviors, which often lead to incarceration. 20 years of guilt is a heavy load, but the least I can do now is share my story, hoping that fans of rap music realize that they have been used for the past 2 decades. Although I plan on remaining anonymous for obvious reasons, my goal is to get this information out to as many people as possible. Please help me spread my word. Hopefully others who attended the meeting back in 1991 will be inspired by this to tell their own stories. Most importantly, if only one life is touched by my story, I pray it makes the weight of my guilt more tolerable. Thank you. Wow. That is pretty incredible.
Prior to gangster rap music, the world was a peaceful place. And then all of that changed. Violence, rape, murder, arson, theft, war. These are all things that came about as a result of gangster rap music.
But wasn't Compton dangerous before gangster rap?
Wrong! Compton was a nature preserve for bunny rabbits. When gangster rap came along, they tore down the country clubs and put up housing projects.
Like a man that can do what he wanna. Ain't nothing like a man that you knew on the corner. Seen come up and fuck up the owner. Seen throw up Westside California. Again, I'm hot as Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Utah. I got multiple bitches. It's a new law. Keep a hold of your riches. Dumb nigga, and don't spend it. As soon as you get it and recognize I'm a captain, you a lieutenant. I can say what I wanna say, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it. Made me do it. If I call you a n***a, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it. I can act like an animal, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it. Made me do it. If I eat you like a cannibal, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it. I'm raw as a dirty needle, choke a eagle, just to feed all my people. Lyrically, I'm so lethal. Plant thoughts in they mind just to defeat you.
Ice Cube is a saga. Y'all spit saliva and I spit lava. I got the fearless flow. Don't get near this hoe if you scared to go. I keep it gangsta. And why should I change that? Oh, you old motherfucker trying to change rap.
Say what?
But ain't you the same cat that sat back when they brought cocaine
say
back?
Say what? Say what?
I'm trying to get me a Maybach. How you mugs and gon' tell me don't say that? You the ones that we learned it from. I heard again back in 1971. So if I act like a pimp, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it. If I call you a nappy headed hoe, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it.
Made me do it.
If I shoot up your college, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it. If I rob you of knowledge, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it.
Made me do it.
Thank God when I bless the mic, you finally get to hear the shit that you like. A nigga talking about real life.
Real life.
So you can try to get this shit right. Use your brain, not your back. Use your brain, not a gat. It's a party, not a jack.
For real.
Don't be scared of them people. Walk up in there and show them that you equal.
Up there.
And don't be material. A nigga grew up on milk and cereal. I never forgot Van Ness and Imperial. Look at my life. Ice Cube is a miracle. It could be you. If you was this lyrical, it could be her. If she was this spiritual, cause me and Allah go back like cronies. I ain't got to be fake. Cause he is my homie.
He is my homie.
If I sell a little crack, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it.
Made me do it.
If I die in Iraq, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it.
Made me do it.
If I take you for granted, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it. If I fuck up the planet, ain't nothing to it. Gangsta rap made me do it.
Made me do it.
Into my pyroclastic flow. You dig into my pyroclastic flow, flow, flow. You dig into my pyroclastic flow.
It's R-A-W.
Oh yeah, and another thing. For all y'all diggins that don't do gangsta rap, don't get on TV talking about gangsta rap. Cause 9 times out of 10 you don't know what the fuck you talking about. Talk about that bullish rap you do. Stay the fuck out of mind.
Oh, sounds like suicide.
Yo, look at these MCs stepping up in my face with no skill, no purpose, fitting all that worthless bull-ish. I'm ready to slaughter some cats.
Cast in a hovercraft and laughs, split you in half and dash. While you're gunning, I'm running the gauntlet easily. It's habit handling the unraveling of the fabric of time leisurely. Time's teasing. I'm climbing the peach tree to harvest the fruits of my labor. I'm trying to teach me to combine the soup with the sayer. Your mind is beneath me. Your milk caught in mental status, MIA style rap, mind and abstinence, cat dropping. Cause in comparison to you, a cloud solid. Mild scenes and wild dreams, smothered in ambiguity. Usually engulf my scholarship as I float atop anecdotes in my stream of consciousness. Through a garden of good and evil angels coming at me at the angle congruent with apathy. As frantically I strive for my life's apogee. Just a touch of such energy filling me till my cup runneth over. But for now I'm stuck climbing this continuous mountain, pushing up boulder, resting in purgatory at my life's play. I'm plugging my part so I'm not cut from the cast list. Ending the swift transformation from activist to pacifist. I'm pacifist to your nurse to quench your thirst for a hearse test. Strip your cursed flesh, stop acting feminine and let your purse rest. With an open chest, you got the nerve to serve words from cleft notes. But I split notes with vaulting daggers through the sounds at most. I split notes with vaulting daggers through the sounds at most.
I take time to make rhyme conform to my purpose. Commit
and hate crimes against cats that spit worthless. I make lines and take lines, my fine skill disperses verses to the intimidated, perforated by verbiage. I take time to make rhyme conform to my purpose. Committing hate crimes against cats that spit worthless. I make minds and take lines, my fine skill disperses verses to the intimidated, perforated by verbiage.
With the assistance of an oxygen mask, your oxygen won't last long enough for you to catch your breath between this and my next masterpiece. After I throw it, you'll know it. Stand in the mirror of this poet, sinister, and watch it, letting your mask decrease. The path to release, trachea, verbal template, taking your own intake with the might of a troglodyte. Slaves of insight, stand in light of the blood of my doorposter, man. Who hope the death angel holds a candle wick. Burn and turn the channel quick until my mental window, a bird of thought flew in before I could close it. Hit in my left hemisphere closet, now I'm open as my scalp palpitates beneath blades of apathetic shades, right from the tree of life. Serpents feeding me apples at night, quenching my thirst with a snapple of right. Volumes with volume, depth of death illuminate charms of inspirational plots on forms to harvest. As my pen illustrates, I'll show that I draw arms to tarnish characters, oblivious to the oblivion you stand in. It's on your shoe, the stitch is following you to your residence of irrelevance. You abyss of nothingness, epitome of contingency. Can't elevate cause I slash your elevator shaft in half before I left your faculty. I'm cancerous, once in your system, symptoms may vary. Chemotherapy isn't potent enough to call my bluff when I rush adrenaline. When I touch the pen again, vulture, I'll haunt ya. Circling next to me, simpleton with complexity, blending with ecstasy. I am a hybrid tongue, dancing in a shapeless wilderness, falling from bliss to this petri dish of existence to fish for men. Reeling them in and throwing them back, cutting no slack in the rat race. In blackface, acting in haste on a quest to chase. And my esophagus holds the progress of the hand of a botanist, planting seeds of verb trees and gardens of weeds. You're starting to bleed from the seams, from the applause I receive.
I take time to make rhyme conform to my purpose. Committing hate crimes against cats that spit worthless. I make minds and take lines, my fine skill disperses verses to the intimidated, perforated by verbiage. I take time to make rhyme conform to my purpose. Committing hate crimes against cats that spit worthless. I make minds and take lines, my fine skill disperses verses to the intimidated, perforated by verbiage. Verses to the intimidated, perforated by verbiage. Verses to the intimidated, perforated by verbiage.
We sure are in a weird place in this country, aren't we? A weird, weird place.
In these times, a poor, somewhat righteous poets and completely co-opted Manchurian MCs, where your favorite poet is probably all too familiar with Top Ramen, and your favorite rapper's owner still obligates him to get back on his knees, it should be happening. And when poets act like rock stars, we call those false prophets. And when rappers act like they're getting far more money than they are, we call those false prophets. And Willie Lynch LLC needs MCs who could be envied by BGs. So if you want to see G's, they're willing to put you out long as you're willing to let them turn you out. And be about that time-tested, destroy our youth focus group, propagandize company message. Dear children, the key to your success is in doing anything you could think of that might possibly get you arrested. Ain't about hard work, no. Stay high, stay drunk, be disrespectful, assault people, tote weapons, family. Willie Lynch LLC has mastered the essence of making sure most will never be everything they can be. They attack the weak. Tell them there's this savage inside you called a huggin', and it's just dying to be free. Then Willie tells its cadre of contractor MCs that they are bound by service level agreement to make sure they find ways per song to say, free your inner huggin', at least 25 times. And of course, every time you say it differently, and then throw in some punchlines and rhymes, and it's like Willie read minds, because if you're a potential sellout, Willie know how to find out. Oh, first he tickle your chin with that pen. Then he massage your back with that warm contract. Then when he slide that rod deep inside you, if he hear you moan, he know he got you configured to murder some innocent children like remote control piloted military drones. And Willie got ample samples over samples. They use damn fools as examples to confuse self-respect and dismantle pride. So if a decade of negativity helps influence a young woman to be a gold digger, it helps influence a young man to be a criminal, that's just the result of those Willie MCs doing their jobs for the many wealthy people who would love to see you dead, who know how to use a proxy to identify and popularize Uncle Toms, who would gladly serve them your head on a platter for little more than crumbs on the table. So the next time you hear a rapper spitting some ignorance that, based on your understanding of the way things work, don't make no damn sense, there's a perfectly rational explanation, sir. That motherfucking laughable abomination must work for Willie.
Now, go find the others.com.
You are just all up in my cornflakes, buddy.